A judge has just ordered hundreds of individuals detained by federal agents to be released.
This week, the Department of Homeland Security claimed its Operation Midway Blitz led to a decrease in homicides, shootings, robberies, and carjackings.
They failed to mention that the decline since mid-September closely mirror what was happening in the city before Border Patrol arrived.
People of Chicago have deserved better than having CBP and Greg Bovino in this city.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. It's our weekly news recap, the big stories that we're getting to today. Chicago is suing the Trump administration again. We take a look at what voting to end the government shutdown could mean for Senator Dick Durbin's political legacy. And Mayor Johnson made some significant concessions in hopes of getting his budget approved by City Council.
City Council members are giving the mayor's budget team a grilling on an outside report.
Negotiations on the controversial corporate head tax are intensifying.
We cannot afford more property taxes, more fines, fees, regressive ways of balancing this budget on the backs of working people.
Nearly 500,000 Illinois residents get their health insurance through the Affordable Care Act.
I have worked with Senator Durbin over the years. He's a good person. He tries to do the right thing. I don't agree with what he did.
We'll get to the recap in just a minute, but before we do, we're going to catch up with one of the panelists. Chicago Sun-Times reporter Sophie Sherry is here with me. Hey, Sophie.
Hi, Sasha.
So good to see you, and congrats. It was your first time on the recap. How'd that feel?
It feels good.
Yeah. Well, you know, we dug into a lot of stuff, right? Because after a chaotic 8 weeks in the Windy City, it looks like the days of ICE and Border Patrol agents roaming our streets with tear gas and rubber bullets, that it could soon be over. And I know, Sophie, that you're one of the reporters who worked on a new Sun-Times investigation. It was looking into how federal agents have been using force and tactics that are banned by Chicago police. So tell us, what are some of the tactics that they use that are actually restricted for local police?
Yeah, that's right. My colleagues and I reviewed, I think, hundreds of court documents, videos, tweets, you know, anything people have posted about agents using force in and around their communities over the past couple of weeks. And we focused in on, like you said, some of those policies that, you know, are banned here in Chicago or have a lot more stricter limitations. Mm. We're talking about vehicle chase policies, use of, you know, pepper spray and gas, chokeholds.
Wow.
And also in trying to dig this all up, you know, it seems that, you know, while these are things that wouldn't be happening here with Chicago police, which is shocking to many, it also seems to be violating a lot of the federal policies that still are on the books. You know, other policies seem to have disappeared. We couldn't even find a vehicle chase policy for, you know, the Department of Homeland Security here.
Right. Did these tactics violate people's constitutional rights?
People are certainly arguing that. I mean, there's a case being fought in federal court right now that was brought by journalists, protesters, clergy members, you know, who say that agents are indiscriminately using these really aggressive and violent tactics.
Even just the sheer mention of vehicle chases brings me back to some of the stories that we've been reporting on for sure. So I want you to put it in context for our listeners and just talk a little bit about how traumatizing this has all been for the communities that were hit.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. As Bovino's on its way out, we're sort of looking back at what's happened here over the past 8 weeks and a couple weeks even before he got here, although his arrival certainly marked an increase in aggression, it seems, according to community members and what we saw. And it's been incredibly traumatizing. I mean, there have been two shootings, one fatal.
Yes.
Our investigation found at least 76 different incidences of use of force over just this 8 weeks. Vehicle chases that have resulted in 8 car crashes across the area. We spoke to the former Chicago Police Superintendent, Gary McCarthy, who said this would be a huge red flag if his department had gotten into 8 car crashes over the past couple weeks.
Jeez. That's Chicago Sun-Times reporter Sophie Sherry. Thank you so much for stopping by, Sophie.
Thanks for having me.
All right, joining Sophie on today's recap, we had David Greising of the Better Government Association and Mac Lederman, reporter with Block Club Chicago. Now, first up, the federal government shutdown. I asked David how Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin's choice to vote with Republicans, how that will impact the outgoing senator's legacy.
His legacy is way deeper than just this episode, but it is a little bit of a blemish as he prepares to retire. Dick Durbin's been serving Illinois for decades, you know, the number two leader in the Senate. He's had a very liberal track record and been a leading voice in that movement. But this decision, you know, he has explained this decision was really about kind of getting people back to work, that as much as the fact that they did not get what the Democrats were holding out for with regard to the Affordable Care Act, that he said, we're getting SNAP benefits back to people, we're putting people back to work who need their jobs, need their income, et cetera, et cetera. We got some concessions, some promises down the road with regard to health care.
And what do you make of him, you know, joining in and making that promise and just voting to end things?
I think it was a vote to end things. I think it was a vote to bring to an end the longest government shutdown in history that seemed to be going nowhere. And there was no sign that they were going to get what they were looking for.
Yeah.
There's some discussion that maybe this was coordinated with Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader, that even though Schumer has said he disagreed with it, that maybe it was an effort because the Democrats were starting to take some heat, even though there are many who think that actually the Democrats were prevailing on the politics of this all. I think Durbin, especially as somebody who doesn't need to pay a price at the polls, he's not running for reelection. I think he made this decision just to kind of bring an end to it.
Yeah. So the deal did not secure a guarantee to extend Affordable Care Act premium subsidies. So that's one of the promises that you were alluding to, that they promised to vote on that in mid-December. Yesterday, though, we talked to the head of one of Chicago's free clinics. She's pretty worried about what this will mean for her patients.
They're going to opt to be uninsured, and we're going to see that demand. We're going to see folks using emergency departments as a form of health care because they're going to wait until they're very sick to seek that care. And so the trickle-down effect for providers is going to be significant.
So, Sophie, the governor called the spending bill to end the government shutdown. He said it was reckless. What do you think? Do you think Democrats who voted for this are going to continue getting this kind of criticism from the party?
I think for the foreseeable future, I think Pritzker also called this an empty promise. We're seeing a lot of Dems this week using this as an opportunity to differentiate themselves from the Durbins of the world. Although this, you know, doesn't speak to his entire record, it is a blemish for many. I think it was Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stadden, who's, you know, fighting for his position, who said we need fighters, not folders in D.C. So I think for the next couple months, at least, we're going to see people use this as a moment to separate themselves.
The jabs are going to continue.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Mac, the spending bill agreement also bans a product sold at hundreds of Chicago businesses.
Yeah, a late provision tacked on to this bill, kind of at the bottom of it, last minute, squeezed in with a little bit of elbow grease, effectively bans hemp nationally. And it bans intoxicating hemp. So I'm sure you've seen these stores, Sasha. They feel like they're popping up on every corner.
Oh, yes.
All around Chicago.
Everywhere.
In my neighborhood, there's a licensed dispensary, and then there's a hemp store right across the street.
Oh, geez.
With the signs of the marijuana leaf. It looks like, you know, try and come here and get it for cheaper. Yeah. That might be no more because of this new bill. It bans intoxicating hemp. And so hemp, unlike a marijuana, a little science lesson here, has very small traces of THC in it. And hemp was legalized in a 2018 farming bill to make things like tote bags and plastics. You can use it for all different sorts of things. And lawmakers at the time, they said, people better not mess around with this and create stuff that gets you high. But that's what people did.
That's exactly what people
did. They effed around and they found out, and you can make stuff out of this. You can concentrate the THC and get people high. And they were selling it all over the place. The cannabis industry hated this because it undercuts their prices, their security measures. It undercuts the states. Legal rollout, which limited licenses. So now these stores that are selling these hemp products have 363 days as of today to pull them off the shelves. But for many people we spoke to yesterday, they say this is effectively a death sentence for their businesses.
Wow. Well, Sophie, Chicago is suing the Trump administration again. This time it's over withholding more than $6 million for a community policing grant. What should we know here?
Yeah, that's right. We're back at it again. This time it's over what they say are unlawful conditions being placed on these community policing funds. And like you said, it's over $6 million worth of funds. It's both Chicago and St. Paul that have sued the Department of Justice, and they're trying to block them from imposing conditions on these grants, which would require cities to prove that they don't operate DEI programs and don't restrict assistance to federal immigration enforcement. This funding, the city says, would be used to hire about 50 new police officers. Mm.
So I want to stick with the city's financial woes here, David, because Alders wrapped up more than 3 weeks of budget hearings this week. So how are things looking right now for Mayor Johnson's spending plan?
Well, there are a lot of questions about the revenue side of the equation, mm-hmm. the spending plan as well, especially with regard to the Chicago Police Department and its record of overspending, and concerns that with the number of empty positions, and in fact, the budget calls for them to not fill some open positions, the huge overtime spending that we've seen at CPD. On the revenue side, though, Mayor Johnson is taking a pretty big hit. He hoped to raise $100 million from a head tax that would apply to companies with 100 or more employees. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of pushback from that. Governor Pritzker came out very stridently against it and warned that it was that he felt that was a non-starter. As a result, Mayor Johnson revised his plan, said we'll apply it to companies only over 200. That's less than 2% of the companies in Chicago.
Right.
But those are very important companies. And Chicago has lost a lot of corporate headquarters, lost a lot of regional headquarters. Hurts the city's business image.
So do you think that all these concessions are going to get him the 26 votes that he needs from the city council?
He was hoping that there would be a vote on the budget next week, and it doesn't look like that is quite ready. He's got a lot of work to do. We saw last year that we went nearly to the December 31st deadline. He seems to be a bit ahead of where he was last year. He's learned a little bit from that bad experience. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you know, the way this works is that he and staff meet with the individual votes that they don't get. They look for some sort of bone they can throw them for their ward.
Right.
And so that's the process that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm. City Treasurer Melissa Conyers Irvin says that she's no longer going to invest in the city's money, invest the city's money in treasury bonds. Rather.
Right.
What is that about?
That's a meaningless political gesture, okay. Frankly.
well said.
You know, the T-bond will be just fine without Chicago's investment money. The T-bond is also a really good and solid investment, highly rated, et cetera.
So she's protesting the Trump administration?
Essentially, this is what that's all about.
Mm. Treasury bonds they're considered a safe investment.
Yeah.
You think this could be injecting even more financial risk for the city at a time when we're facing a $1.19 billion deficit?
Well, it's really it's not a big factor.
It's like meaningless, but could it be like super hurtful to us too?
It could be. It probably raises some questions in the minds of rating agencies about how responsibly is the city managing its funds when you just write off a segment of the investment portfolio that just about every other city in the country would deploy.
Right.
But again, this is really kind of a show for political benefit at a very local level. It's not going to be very important.
How are Alders reacting to this plan?
There's a mix, but they're not fans. They see through this. They know what's going on.
Yeah, Northwest Side Alder Anthony Napolitano of the 41st Ward, apparently he had to walk out of council chambers to cool off.
Speaking of political demonstrations, I'm not sure this is the sort of thing that like makes
so much drama
makes somebody quite so hot. But it was a good way for him
so
to score a point.
So upset about these treasury bonds.
Get mentioned on your show. So, yeah.
We did get some good financial news from the CTA, Mac. No fare hikes next year. Time for us to celebrate? Or is public transit still in relatively dire straits?
I'd say so. Let's celebrate if you can still afford the ride. The CTA, they plan to raise fares at 25 cents. So that would have made a bus ride $2.50 instead of $2.25 and a train ride $2.75 instead of $2.50. We don't have to worry about that anymore. So save your quarters, stockpile them up, invest them somewhere if you can.
T-bonds.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go.
But this brand new windfall of state money came just at the right time, the nick of time, which I'm sure you guys have been covering too with the fiscal cliff bailout. So mm-hmm. now the CTA is a little bit more flush with money than they were before. Quite the flip of the script here, Sasha. And they're talking about doing things like expanding the Orange Line 24/7. Which would be a huge benefit to people in that part of town. I've gone over there quite a bit. It's a really hard part of town to reach the Orange Line serves if you don't have a car. So I think 24/7 access for the Orange Line makes a lot of sense.
Right.
That's not included. They had just approved their CTA budget at a board meeting on Wednesday. No immediate plans to make the Orange Line 24/7, but that's something they said they'll do as more and more of the money comes in. But for now, at least we know that fares are going to stay exactly where they are.
They had me at no fare hikes.
And it gives you a little bit of whiplash to go from this $770 million fiscal cliff across the system to the CTA now saying, yeah, we don't need that fare hike. I understand the progressive aspect of the fare hike.
Yeah.
Those quarters do mean a lot to a lot of people. But when they're facing the system-wide $1 billion deficit next year, for them to not thinking, you know, let's kind of hoard our resources here. Let's really be spend and receive money, mm-hmm. you know, very efficiently. It's a little bit worrisome in terms of what's coming on and whether they maybe feel more at ease than perhaps they should, given what's coming down the pike for them.
I'll just add a lot of the questions from the board members at the meeting on Wednesday was, when exactly is this money going to come into you guys? There not seems to be a clear, concise plan of when they'll receive it and how they'll spend it. So a lot of unanswered questions there.
It's been 8 weeks since Border Patrol Chief Gregory Bovino and his agents arrived in Chicago. And it seems like as the temperatures drop here in the Windy City, their presence may drop as well. So what's the latest, Sophie?
Yeah, that's right. It appears Chief Bovino is on his way out of Chicago. Like you said, he's been here 8 weeks. His arrival really marked a significant shift in terms of tactics and use of force we saw from agents on the streets here. But Bovino himself confirmed to Fox News Thursday that he had, in fact, left the city. He and hundreds of other agents are training in West Virginia, he told anchors there. But he sort of left the door open of what's next, saying they could return to Chicago. They might head to New York City and maybe North Carolina.
Yeah, the rumor is that immigration agents might even return here in the spring in higher numbers than we're seeing right now.
That's right. Sources told my colleagues that Bovino and his crew could be back in the springtime, this time with hundreds of Border Patrol agents. That would be about four times more than what we've seen on the streets these past weeks.
Yeah, the ICE agents also decided earlier this week to take a group photo at the Bean, because that's what you do in the midst of immigration enforcement. Unlike other visitors to our beautiful city, though, these agents seem to be, I think, taunting us a little bit, at least Little Village residents. David, how do you think that all went over with Chicagoans?
I think it shows the tin ear that the enforcement services have had throughout this. They didn't receive a warm reception at the Bean. They didn't receive one in Little Village. Of course, that in that episode, that was supposedly, you know, people were throwing rocks and et cetera, which is gone to court.
And when they were getting ready to take the photo, they said, you know, instead of say cheese, they said, say Little Village.
Say Little Village. And it's just unseemly for somebody at a high level in the federal government to be taunting a neighborhood, the people who live there, the residents who are both citizens and also immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Governor Pritzker has kind of risen to this and gotten into a back and forth with the head of the Customs Bureau. So it's, you know, some of this stuff is just beneath the dignity of the various offices involved. And in the meanwhile, the people in neighborhoods like Little Village or in the other places we've seen these disturbances are just kind of casualties of this huge political thing that's going on at the federal level.
Yeah, we'll dig more into some of what's been happening in Little Village in just a second. But speaking of local outrage, I want to squeeze this in, David, because a prominent group of nearly 40 retired broadcast journalists, they signed their names to a pretty unprecedented letter to the editor. This was in the Tribune. Tell us more.
Well, this group of retired people, these are names that, you know, that a lot of us would know, you know, Derek Blakely, Carol Marine, Andy Shaw, mm-hmm. Pam Zekman.
Phil Ponce.
These are people who
Tom Skilling
got in on it. That was awesome.
He's everywhere.
Yeah. But they're just expressing their outrage at what is happening, that as veteran journalists, that they are obviously opposed to what ICE is doing and mm-hmm. opposed to the affront this has, especially taking into account the fact that journalists in some respects have been targeted at some of these demonstrations. Journalists right. have been hit by rubber bullets, have experienced been tear gas, et cetera.
Absolutely.
That doesn't make them different than a lot of the people who are there. But to the extent that perhaps they've been targeted, mm-hmm. that is very, very important.
And let me tell you a little bit of what they wrote. This is how they closed the letter. They said, quote, "We covered the city for a living and love it. And we want you to know that what's happening here is not normal. It's eroding all of our rights and should be a warning to other cities."
Well, I think it should be a warning to other cities.
Have we seen something like this before with retired journalists speaking up in this way?
Never. That I've been around. I'm a peer with a bunch of these people.
Don't date yourself.
I've covered a lot of stories with a lot of the people on that list, and no, we've never seen this in the history of the city. I mean, we saw it in the 60s. We saw disturbances that mm-hmm. involved National Guard, that involved tear gas, and all that. Of course, the 68 convention, but there's nothing like the federal government basically putting forces into a city against the wishes of the mayor, against the wishes of the governor, and staying and causing trouble the way that they have been. So, yeah.
Mac, fill us in on a local daycare worker who was arrested last week. She's been released, but this was after a judge called her detention unlawful. So take us back and give us the details of that case.
Yeah, we're starting to learn more about Diana Patricia Santiago Galliano is her name. She's a daycare teacher. She arrived in the United States in 2023 from Colombia, where she said she feared for her life. So she applied for asylum and she received work permission to work in the United States through 2029 while her asylum case plays out. That's how she ended up working at this daycare, Rayo mm-hmm. de Sol, in the North Center neighborhood. And she worked in the infant room, and a lot of the parents I spoke to and my colleagues spoke to described her as someone who took to these kids really as their own. These are kids from the north side of the city who whose parents put them in the school because they wanted to learn a second language. It's a Spanish immersion school. Okay. So Miss Diana, as they call her, really became the center focus of this jarring video that I think it's fair to say rocked the city of Chicago, where immigration agents pulled her out of the vestibule of the daycare and into a car and drove her away. She was detained, and I think this is really just one of the flashpoint cases of the types of people that ICE agents have been seen taking out of our streets, street vendors, landscapers, a daycare teacher on top of all that. So mm-hmm. The judge ordered her release, and this is part of a larger problem that the Trump administration has been making this faulty argument leading to thousands of people across the country being detained prior to going through immigration proceedings. The attorneys on the other side say that this is a concerted effort by them to force people into self-deportations.
Any idea when Miss Diana is expected to be back to work?
Not sure yet, but she's supposed to appear publicly Friday with parents of the school. That's since been canceled. They're asking people to respect her privacy at the time, but she's out. She was released even before she was supposed to have a bond hearing on the matter, so it seems like maybe in some ways federal agents kind of gave up on this case, and she's in the country with work permissions through 2029, so that's quite a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I hope she goes back soon, but I can also see why a return to that daycare center might feel a little traumatizing mm-hmm. for her, given what happened. As Border Patrol Chief Bovino and his troops plan their departure from the area, President Trump is saying that Operation Midway Blitz is responsible for lowering violence rates in Chicago. He's saying that this whole thing has been a success, Sophie.
Right.
But what's local data telling us?
Yeah, the Trump administration and Department of Homeland Security have started throwing out a lot of numbers this week. Seems to be sort of to mask the news that Bovino may be out. They're trying to say it's working and we're doubling down. But like you said, Chicago police data does not match that narrative. Numbers have been decreasing since before Bovino and crew arrived. Mm-hmm. In August, Trump called the city a war zone, even though we'd seen the fewest murders since 1965 this past summer.
God, he called it more than just that.
Right. And now he wants credit for what has already been going on those past couple of months.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you think? President Trump is trying to take credit for making our streets safer. Mac and David? Well, typical Trump?
I don't know. I've been seeing a lot of videos in the last few weeks that don't look that safe in some of these neighborhoods like Broadview, Brighton Park, and east, the far southeast side. Little Village, for example. I think they've been a provocation in the places that they've shown up, and the Governor Pritzker, I think, has made a fair point that some of the incidents we're talking about are potentially violations of people's constitutional rights, right, dragging people away merely because they have dark skin, merely because they don't look like the world that President Trump and the ICE and the Customs and Protection Bureau all think they should look. And it's really startling, and I don't think it's contributing to public safety.
I guess I'll add, numbers can be used as politics, and it seems like the numbers put out there by Greg Bovino was kind of fashioned as a way to say mission accomplished, with the yearbook photo of them outside the Bean was what they used.
Right.
We saw Trump go after the Miracle Mile, as he called it, rather, as I'm sure you all know, as a magnificent mile, with more false information. Just that didn't say that there's actually a rebound going on downtown. So a lot of ways they're kind of throwing out these numbers and saying, we're ready to move on. Chicago has been saved.
I saw them right before that. I happened to be driving on Monroe right before their photo shoot.
Oh, wow. You
and they were parked right outside of the Art Institute. And I was like, why are there so many of them here? And, you know, one was running his hands through his mohawk that he put some fresh gel into. So I'm like, I should have known this was for a picture.
Yeah. The really discouraging thing about this is that the Chicago Police Department and civic groups have been working so hard to reduce violence in a legitimate way. And violence is way down at levels, as Sophie pointed out, we haven't seen in decades. To claim that this is responsible is just really a false narrative that steals credit from people who've worked really hard to help make these reductions happen.
Yeah, and for another story just last week, my colleagues and I were reading up on a research paper that was recently published that showed nationwide these really aggressive immigration enforcement campaigns rarely ever change crime rates. And if anything, they force many immigrant communities to underreport crime. People are less willing to go to police with issues. So I think that's something, colleagues have reported out on numbers of 911 calls decreasing out of immigrant communities like Little Village.
Right.
So that's, something to think about as well.
A federal judge ordered the release of more than 600 detainees who were arrested during Operation Midway Blitz. He's ordering that they be released by noon today. Any more you can share about the judge's ruling, Sophie?
Mm-hmm. So these are arrests that possibly violate a 2022 consent decree, which places strict limitations on ICE's ability to make warrantless arrests in Illinois as well as other surrounding states. So these 650 detainees come from a list of roughly 1,800 people ICE has arrested in the Chicago area between June and October of this year. And the judge identified that dozens of these people were arrested on their way to work, landscapers, rideshare drivers, a handful picked up at Home Depots or Menards. So as you said, this date of release is up in the air. The Justice Department has asked for more time. Mm-hmm. It's unclear how many of these people actually still remain in the country.
Yeah, like are some still here?
Right. So lawyers, for the plaintiffs here don't know themselves how many have already been deported. And the judge also was sure in her ruling Wednesday to state that she doesn't want to release anyone who could be seen as a public safety threat. So they're giving the Department of Justice a bit of time to try and identify who those individuals might be.
Yeah.
So, the ultimate list of who gets released on conditions is unknown, and when that will happen is still a bit unknown.
David, I want to go back to talking more about the tactics being used here by ICE agents, because one of your colleagues at the Better Government Association wrote about agents deploying tear gas, even still, like after Chicago police have asked them not to.
Yes, Chicago police showed up at an episode on the far southeast side, east side neighborhood, 105th and Avenue N. And they were not equipped for tear gas. They didn't have masks. Evidently, they didn't have helmets. There's a question there about their tactics showing up without equipment in a situation that might be escalated like that. But despite the fact that there is video showing discussions between the Border Patrol people and Chicago police, and the fact that the police were trying to get between protesters and the federal agents in order to kind of protect public safety, some of the feds started throwing tear gas. Mm-hmm. And as a result, quite a few Chicago police officers were hit by the tear gas. They were unprepared for it, including some of the command people were hit by it. That shows that how widespread it was.
Right.
And this is similar to other episodes we've seen where Chicago police have shown up and tried to mitigate some of the tension, tried to help agents depart, and instead agents have, from the feds, have kind of, again, provoked tension and used tear gas and rubber bullets, et cetera, et cetera.
Sophie, we had news this week as well. This was of a Palatine police officer allegedly assisting federal agents in an immigration arrest. What are the details?
Right. So this incident that happened in late October immediately raised concerns among community members that officers there in Palatine were violating the Trust Act, which is Illinois law that prohibits local law enforcement from participating or aiding in immigration enforcement. And in this incident, we have a Palatine police officer arrive as a crowd is sort of forming around federal agents attempting to make an immigration arrest. Under the Trust Act, local law enforcement is allowed to do sort of crowd control, maintain the peace and safety, mm-hmm. whatever they'd like to call it. But we see this officer there quickly go to what appears to be aid these federal, literally give a hand to federal agents. He tells the crowd to sort of disperse, and it seems they listen, mm-hmm. yet he still goes over and literally puts a hand down to help three federal agents who are kneeling on, laying on top of this man, put him in cuffs.
Wow. So, Mac, let's go back to Little Village for a moment, because despite what we're discussing here, these alarming tactics being used by ICE agents, we're seeing citizens and politicians across the city and suburbs stand up for our neighbors, essentially. I know that you were in Little Village this week. You were there Tuesday covering that gathering that got a little out of hand.
Yeah, you could say so.
What'd you see?
So we'll go back to that spat between Bovino and J.B. Pritzker. Bovino dared Pritzker to join his agents in Little Village on Tuesday. But when it came to Tuesday,
dared him. Middle school.
Felt like every news outlet and photographer in town was in Little Village. And J.B. Pritzker came to Little Village. The only person who didn't come to Little Village was Greg Bovino and his agents. And that was the day we had the news that they were eminently heading out of town, which seems like they are per Sophie's colleagues reporting.
West Virginia, right?
J.B. Pritzker spoke at a veterans memorial. He spoke about Bovino at that event, in which a crowd of veterans booed Bovino, which I thought was quite the interesting scene. Many of these veterans are immigrants themselves. And there was a little bit of a standoff, however, between J.B. Pritzker and a few protesters who grabbed a microphone and took him to task for putting state police outside of the Broadview ICE facility. We've been seeing more and more arrests by state police officers outside the facility ever since federal fences went down. J.B. Pritzker seems to really have taken this task of crowd control under the state's purview, which has raised a bunch of interesting questions about collaboration with federal agents or not, if it's a violation of the Illinois Trust Act. Mm-hmm. So J.B. Pritzker is definitely still sticking it to Bovino on the national level, but there's a definitely contingency of local progressives who don't like the way he's been acting.
Yeah. Mac, sticking with you there, you've got an update, I hear, on that South Shore building that was raided by agents in September. What's the latest there?
Yeah, well, first I'll encourage everyone to read the ProPublica investigation about residents, Venezuelans, who were swept up in this raid. Many of them, no criminal record, no federal charges after their arrest. So really painting more and more of this picture of just this made-for-Hollywood production show of force in South Shore. But after that story is gone, we at Block Club try to stick on a neighborhood level, and we've been following this building, and there's still people living in this building, Sasha. There's about a dozen residents still in this building, about 10 squatters, according to building participants, and this building is in the center of a $27 million foreclosure lawsuit for unpaid mortgages. And the federal judge who's overseeing that case last week took control of the building away from the landlord and gave it to a receiver, which is often seen as a means of last resort. And this receiver is now tasked to secure the building and get the rest of the residents out as soon as possible and move them elsewhere, because the judge on her assessment said that this building is effectively a fire hazard waiting to happen.
Quick turn to you here, Sophie, because you did a deep dive this week. This was into Border Patrol agents' campaign donations.
Yeah, that's right. My colleague Bob Hergeth and I dug into thousands of donations made by those identifying as Border Patrol employees over the past couple of election cycles. We found that Greg Vivino himself, while this may not be surprising to many, has donated to the Trump campaign. We found this interesting because
really?
He has, you know, up until this sort of moment, claimed to be apolitical. But yes, he himself is among those who gave to Trump. There was about 200 donors who identified as border protection agents who gave close to 1,000 contributions over this past election cycle. And the majority of those were to Republican candidates, were our findings.
I am shocked. 84-year-old civil rights leader Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. has been hospitalized with a rare neurological disorder. He was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease over a decade ago, and his family right now is asking for everyone's prayers as he's battling this condition. David, I can't say shocking news, but it's definitely disheartening to hear what's going on.
Well, absolutely. Time moves on for all of us, and sadly,
I know his health had been declining.
Yeah, if you've seen him around, as I have over the last couple of years, his physical decline has been evident, but mentally he's still been quite sharp. You have to kind of bend over and listen to him. He has a hard time speaking, but the wheels are still turning. And I had the honor, I guess, of profiling Jesse Jackson when President Obama was first running for president, and there was a hot mic episode where he said some things about these upstarts trying to kind of steal the civil rights banner from them. But what I learned in that time was just, this is somebody who the whole idea of civil rights and equality and equity is just in his DNA. And to travel with him, I actually traveled him to Memphis, and we went to the Lorraine Hotel where Martin Luther King was shot. He was down in the parking lot when King was shot. King was calling out to him when he was murdered. It was just interesting to see the way people responded to him. He is a living symbol of the civil rights movement of the 60s, and he has lived that throughout his life and never let go of it, through ups and downs and all kinds of insinuations and accusations about his motives and that he enriches himself, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
This is a person who really believes in a way that people don't purely believe in things very much anymore. Mm-hmm. And as his life comes to a close, evidently, it is a passing of a generation of people who changed this country and this world for the better.
Yeah, I'm certainly sending my prayers out to Mr. Jackson and his family. I want to pivot now to the weather whiplash that we've seen this week. Some areas got hit with a foot of snow, and then the snow began melting right before our eyes on Wednesday and Thursday as the temperatures went back up to the 50s. And I don't know if y'all caught these, but there were some pretty incredible photos and videos online of just vibrant fall leaves peeking out through the blanket of snow. Classic Chicago? is that what we're seeing here, you think?
I can't believe how nice the weather has been for the middle of November. I played golf poorly as recently as 2 weekends ago.
Really?
So, yeah. I'd like to continue this as much as possible. If we can only limit the amount of cold to a few months and ride this out for the end of November, mm-hmm. I think everyone in Chicago would not complain about that.
Have you pulled out the heavy, heavy coat yet, Sophie?
I made the mistake of pulling out the heavy, heavy coat, only to be very warm by the time I arrived at the office this week. But yeah, it looks like we're in for a beautiful weekend. Get to watch my Michigan Wolverines take on Northwestern at Wrigley Field.
She's a Michigan fan,
under
I forgot.
Under the glorious sun. Welcome to any alumni in town and listening.
I'm a Northwestern alum. So.
I would say that the snow also gave Governor Pritzker a chance to jibe Bongino of the Border Patrol, saying he's a snowflake because he didn't show up in Little Village. In any event, we use weather for our political purposes sometimes.
Oh, us Chicagoans. Well, speaking of incredible photos, too. There were actually beautiful shots of the Northern Lights in Chicago this week. Did anyone actually see it with their own eyes, not just online?
Mm, not me.
Not I.
I guess we need to get outside.
We need
more.
To get outside more.
Yeah, we were probably all inside working. Yeah.
The pictures I saw were beautiful. It was, nice.
Right.
And
yeah,
purple
I had no
and
idea
pink
that was even possible.
All
here.
These colors. These colors.
Yeah.
Now, we got to check in on some local restaurants. Not getting great news. Chicago's fine dining icon, Alinea, lost one of its 3 Michelin stars. Now, the Michelin Guide didn't give any details about why the restaurant lost a star, but have any of you been lucky enough to experience Alinea?
No, and now I'm never going.
Why?
Not enough stars.
Because
a star has
fallen.
I have some, you know, friends who work in fine dining, and they said, "Heavy is the head that wears the crown." This is a restaurant that had one of the top titles of the Michelin marks for a really long time, and it's really hard to sustain a restaurant for a year, let alone decades at a time. And I think this kind of trend of micro food that I know Lineal specials in is kind of a little bit more on the way out. So you got to keep it fresh if you want to keep the title.
It's just not enough food for me, man. How much faith do you all place in these Michelin ratings? Are you paying attention to this stuff, Sophie?
I think, unfortunately, yes.
You are?
I love a Bib Gourmand. Is that the, I don't know if I've ever dined at any of our Michelin star restaurants, but I'll take a peek at.
Yeah. I've never looked that up. It's like, if I happen to be at one, it's like, oh, nice surprise.
I was traveling with my daughter recently, and she was using Bib Gourmand. And to tell you, they're pretty good.
Yeah, because
we had a couple really good picks. Mm-hmm.
Would anybody seek out a Michelin-starred restaurant on vacation?
Possibly.
The silence is deafening.
You know, I feel like I've been overseas to some maybe that are less like a Alinea level and more approachable that have, you know, had a star, I think.
I'll speak to my friends to the left and right, but I don't think we got into journalism for the fancy dinners.
We sure didn't. We can't afford it either. Mac, let's talk about, while we're talking restaurants here, another high-profile Chicago restaurant's facing tough times. I know there's been some great reporting from Block Club's Melody Mercado on this, so give us the very latest on Gino and Marty's in the West Loop.
Yeah, major props to Melody, who's been working on this for months, and I think this is what Block Club does best. This might have been a story that had not been covered if it wasn't for a hyper-local neighborhood news outlet like Block Club. There's my pitch. But Melody Mercado reported that this restaurant, Gino and Marty's, it's by a man named Gino Bartucci, who's from a very prominent Italian family who supplies pasta to restaurants all around the city. So this was Gino's own enterprise. This restaurant had attracted the likes of Kevin Durant and Megan Thee Stallion and other celebrities, but it closed very quietly over the summer, and Melody found in the trail of his closing was over $400,000 in unpaid rent, vendor bills, taxes, and wages.
Wow, that's a lot.
And she talked to many of the people who claimed that they missed out on their entire wages and paychecks for the last summer they worked, and now they're taking it all to the Illinois Labor Board and small claims court. One man who worked as a personal assistant for Gino Bartucci claimed that he was working 60 hours a week, driving him around, taking places, talking to vendors, and was not paid for any of it, so much so that he had to max out his credit cards just to stay afloat
keep
his child going. So it's really just a difficult situation to hear about. And through this all, Gino Bartucci is planning a comeback for this restaurant and is claiming that he's restructured and has new investors and that the restaurant will be open again soon. I guess after this report, we'll see if that actually happens.
Incredible. Now, folks, even though the government shutdown's over, air travel's still being impacted. Chicago, we got a double whammy earlier in the week, the government shutdown and the snow. At a press conference at O'Hare on Tuesday, Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy warned that although flight cancellations have eased, we're going to still see some delays. And according to the FAA, right now, flight reductions are at about 6%. Which, if you consider the 10% originally expected, that's a good thing, right? Any of you worried, though, that this might trickle on a little too long and air travel may disrupt your Thanksgiving plans?
I know a lot of people who chose not to travel home for Thanksgiving this year, given just the general uncertainty with air travel. I assume prices and, you know, flights might bounce back in a couple days, but just the larger political uncertainty, air traffic controllers coming out and saying that they're working second jobs as Uber drivers during the shutdown, I think that scared a lot of people from sinking into their piggy bank and buying flights home this year.
Yeah, I didn't have plans to leave town for Thanksgiving, but I also wasn't jumping to make any either, given what was happening. Are you traveling, David?
Not traveling over Thanksgiving, but it takes this system a long time to get back in order after a breakdown like we've had over the last few weeks. And the worrisome thing is that, okay, we've stopped this shutdown, but January, another deadline looms,
right,
and we might have another. And it's evident, though, that on a political basis, when you shut down the air traffic control system, essentially, or at least reduce it significantly, that's a real touch point for mm-hmm. people. I think there's no coincidence that the shutdown was resolved when the flights started getting interrupted. So
right.
Maybe there'll be more attention paid to that next time around if there is another shutdown.
Right. And we know Thanksgiving, it's all about family and food. But let's not forget that for some people, Thanksgiving is about something else. Shopping. I want to revisit something that we talked about earlier in the recap, because President Trump had a late night social media post that we referenced earlier in the show. I want to read exactly what he said, though. He said, quote,
"Look,
the Miracle Mile Shopping Center in Chicago, once considered our nation's best, now has a more than 28% vacancy factor and is ready to call it quits unless something is done about the murder and crime, which is prevalent throughout the city. Call in the troops fast before it's too late." I'm looking at you. Y'all are shaking your heads at me. Where do we begin with this one? I mean, again, this is him again talking about crime here in Chicago and how, you know, again, hinting at his federal troops coming in and saving the day. But he's also saying that no one's shopping at the Mag Mile. It's not the Miracle Mile.
No.
Right? Last time I checked.
Well, his data is wrong. Revenues are down like 23%, or vacancies are at 23%, not 28%. But in that strip, it's not what it used to be. It is not really a magnificent mile anymore. A lot of that is due to changes in the way people purchase things. So much has gone on online, et cetera.
People used to travel here just to shop.
Yeah, absolutely.
On that stretch. Is that not so much anymore?
Less so. I mean, the super high-end shops are still there, still open, still flourishing. But if you go through Water Tower Place, it's nothing like what it used to be. The more mid-level retail is being eaten up by online shopping, and also the fact that fewer people are downtown in any event. You'll still see people traveling here for holiday shopping. It's an excursion that shopping is a big part of, but just going to Chicago during the holidays is part of it. But I think President Trump has a point. Yeah, the numbers are down, but it's a little more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Not surprisingly than President Trump would make it out to be.
Oh, not at all. I'm calling the troops fast. And I must add, this was all in caps.
Oh, of course.
All in caps. I mean, just looking around the table here, is all your shopping done online these days? Or are you the type that likes to pick out your items in person? What do you think, Sophie?
As a Chicago kid, going to Water Tower was a magical experience at Christmas time, but I hate to say that the magic's lost a little. I would say I'm primarily shopping online these days.
Yeah,
I can't imagine if there were federal troops marching up and down the Mag Mile, if that would make me more inclined to get out there for the holidays, but...
Sarcasm?
Yeah.
Here's what I'm thinking, Mac. Could there be another reason why President Trump's frustrated by retail vacancy rates on Michigan?
Yeah, I think there might be, Sasha. And the retort from the governor Pritzker to what Donald Trump had to say cited an article that I wrote several months ago about Trump Tower retail space being the longest running single vacancy in all of the Chicago riverfront, which is actually sees a collection of thriving high-end restaurants right there on that strip, along the river, and bars, and you name it. It's bustling there in the summer, but he can't fill this space. It's been sitting there for so many years. And when he asked local brokers why, it's because that Trump name and 20-foot letters right above the tower just carries too much baggage for a tenant. So he has new real estate agents in there trying to make it work. It's the fourth different group of real estate agents that have tried to do this. And so far, I don't think there's been any bites either.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guthman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.
Rise and shine. WBEZ is serving local stories for breakfast every weekday morning from 5 to 11. Tune in on the WBEZ app to hear what Chicago's talking about as you start your day.